Welcome to the Teachers Talkin' Podcast, hosted by Dustin Tatro and Ghazali Abdul-Wahab. In this podcast, we discuss all things education and teaching, from innovative teaching methods to challenges to strategies and much, much more. In this discussion or roundtable-based podcast, we bring in educators from all around the world to talk about a variety of education topics so that we can support as many teachers as possible. We want this to be a place of inspiration, personal and professional development, and simply a place where we can elevate education together. Welcome to Teachers Talkin'. Welcome to another episode of Teachers Talkin'. As always, I am Dustin, here with my co-host Ghazali, and we're really excited to be diving into another insightful conversation today and another first for the podcast, because we have yet to talk about data, and that's what we're going to do today. So today we are just thrilled to bring on Tom Caster. He's a former secondary mathematics teacher with nearly 20 years of experience in education. He's taught on 5 continents and in 7 different countries, which is incredible. And now he runs the Datafied Classroom, which is a company dedicated to making student and classroom data more visual and usable for educators. So this episode is titled Data-Driven Teaching, Making Classroom Insights Actionable. And we're going to explore how teachers and administrators can better leverage data for instructional decision-making. And we're going to have a guiding question today of how can educators effectively use data to inform instruction and improve student outcomes. So before we dive into the conversation, Tom, we would love for you to just share a bit about your journey as an educator and what led you to start the Datafied Classroom.
Sure. I started teaching after a corporate career. Probably about 18 years ago. So, you know, 20 years ago, I was teaching in Indianapolis for a short bit, and I decided that, well, actually, even when I started teaching, I had a cousin who was a principal in Brasilia. And she said, if you teach, you need to go overseas. You need to go overseas. So I did a couple years in the States to kind of get the footing under me. And then I moved overseas. I've lived in Trinidad and Tobago, London, England, Cairo, Egypt, New Delhi, Argentina, and now Chile. So kind of moved around quite a bit and mostly focused on, as you mentioned, I'm a secondary math teacher, but mostly IB teaching, standard level math. And then, you know, after 18 years, you tend to need a break. A lot of people need to take a little break here and there. And so I thought, what else can I do while still being part of the educational world? My wife is a teacher. So, you know, I thought this is something that is needed. That we all talk about data. Everybody talks about data, 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 data. And then they say, all right, go do the data. Just go do it. And most people, maybe not most, but it seems as to me, most people don't really know what to do with it or how to work with it. So mm-hmm. I thought, well, how can I find a way to help teachers? Because I am still very passionate about education. I'm still very passionate about students, and I know that teachers need help. So I started my own company to try to start helping with data.
Awesome.
Awesome. Yeah, you took the words right out of my mouth, Dustin.
Yeah.
Awesome. I think I'm fated to meet Tom today because one of my New Year's resolution was I want to be more data-driven in my pedagogy, right? And how I teach in the classroom. But that has always scared me because unlike you, Tom, I'm an English teacher. So I'm afraid, I hate, and I fear numbers, right? So maybe before we deep dive into that, can you tell us a bit about what are some of the most impactful ways teachers and even administrators can use data to support student learning?
I think the best way is, well, I'd put it two ways. For the classroom teacher, I think it's being able to look at the class data and just get a better feel for what what a student is doing. It's not just an average. It's not just a single test score, assessment score. There's more to it. There's always more to it. We know in our heart of hearts that we know these things about our students, and we need to, but we are either relying on the single statistic, the single average, or we're relying on our gut, our heart, and the, they need to be married. They need to be, they need to be twofold, in conjunction. So that's part of, I think, where the visualization comes in, because, you know, even though numbers are not scary, you don't have to be afraid of them. You know, they want to be loved too, just like all the words out there.
They don't show it to me, man.
Me either. Yeah.
They scold me a lot. I make a lot of
mistakes. Oh, no. So if we can put it into pictures, you know, pictures are worth thousands of words. So, you know, let's get it visualized. Let's find ways that we can look at this where it's not just a single number, a single average, or a single whatever, and where it's not just a gut. So we can actually have some decision making in our classrooms. And I think as far as schools go, that's such a big question. It really depends on what the school is looking to do and what they are hoping to do. Or, you know, what are they curious about? Because every statistic that's shown, there should be the question should be like, why are you showing me this? And where does this number come from? That's in my opinion. So, you know, I've seen a lot of PD presentations, where I'm seeing all these statistics and my natural gut instinct is like, well, what are you trying to sell me here? Like, I know we're a school, but you're selling me something. You're selling me an approach. You're selling me something. Where is all of this coming from? And why is that data? Why is that one sticking out? Why are you highlighting that? And where did that come from? And so, you know, I don't think that people are using data to be nefarious, but there's all kinds of underlying questions. And I think that's how schools can really start digging in more, because I think they have to really see what are the underlying questions to that goes into this data.
Yeah, so that's what comes into my mind. I have so many questions for you today. Okay, one of the important things, of course, first we need to know, what does your company do? Are you like a consultant, or do you provide an app, something that gathers the data for the teachers and interprets it for them? Or are you like a person who goes down to the school and decides or helps the administration and the teachers to analyze the data? What exactly does your company do?
Yes. I'll just say yes.
All of that?
So ideally all of that. So, you know, I'm a one person show, but my driving philosophy, my motto, my vision, whatever you want to call it, is how can I help teachers and schools and administrators without giving them more work to do? So do I have an app? Well, sort of. You know, for classroom teachers, I've created a couple different, you know, just basic spreadsheets, but maybe not so basic, but some spreadsheets that people can download, where for standards-based grading. So, you know, here we're talking about meets, exceeds, progressing, and how do you average words? How do you summarize these lines and lines of data for each of these kids? How do you see how the class is doing with all of this? And so I take those inputs, which most teachers are saving somewhere in a spreadsheet. So I was like, well, here, use this spreadsheet that I have. And what it will do is it will take all of those, pretend that they're numeric for a moment, just to help organize them a little bit, but then put it into a scatter plot, you know, with all the little dots on there and the lines going through them, and creates a trend over time for a particular standard, or a particular concept, or a particular proficiency, or whatever, however you're grading. So it will have an average, it will have a comparison of summative, informative, or everything, kind of all grouped together, and then have an image of a scatter plot for that particular standard. So you can kind of see where the trend is going. So the trend will show you like, okay, you know, they might have dropped with this last assessment, but really when we look at everything all at once, they're going in one direction or they're going in the other direction. For IB teachers, I also have an app or a spreadsheet. Again, every IB teacher is storing information because they have to give predicted grades for the assessments. So I created a predicted grade calculator for them. And then also for IB schools, we have at the end of, after all of the exams, we have the IB sends back results to the schools. And every school I've taught at, starting at the beginning of the following year, we say, hey, let's look at last year's results. Let's see what we can find from it. And what that has always been is, here's some spreadsheets and some PDFs, teachers, go figure out what trends you can find. And within the half hour or 45 minutes that we have, nobody can find anything. So they're just trying to figure out how to sort the spreadsheet. So nothing's actually ever done. So as I was learning how to work with data, I asked my school here in Chile, I said, can I use our data so I can just play around with this a little bit? And I built a platform for it. It's called Looker Studio. It's attached to Google. And there's actually plugins now that go directly from spreadsheets into Looker Studio, which is pretty cool. But I put this together and the IB coordinator was like, this is amazing. I've got teachers here who've never looked at this data seriously for 20 years, who are now digging in and trying to figure out how they can improve their classroom, how they can improve the scores on this component or that component. So that's kind of where I was like, well, hey, maybe there's something to this, you know, I'll give it a shot. As far as the other aspects that you were asking, do I go into schools? Do I consult with schools? You know, these are the tools that I've pre-made. I'm looking to partner with other schools to see if there are other schools that want to do a data processing or data gathering for this reason or that reason, map scores, whatever the case might be. You know, I'm looking to partner with schools for that. And hopefully at some point that will come with in-school training as well, because I do think that there's going to be a component of that as well for our teachers who are a little bit shy around data, we'll say. So, you know, let's get it in there. Yeah. Let's get in there and help out you folks. And say, you know, here are some tools, here are some ways to look at it. Here are some things to consider. Let's make this so it's not so scary. And so that's the kind of the third leg there.
So, you know, you have a lot of useful tools, it sounds like, that can really help teachers to start digging into data or help schools, which is really wonderful. And you talked a bit about, you know, standards. So for one, I'm curious, like for the standard unpacking that you're doing, is that universal to any type of standard? Is that designed for one particular type of standard or, you know, what is that like?
Well, I tried to make it as general as possible. So, so I say it's a little spreadsheet, but it's, you know, multiple tabs, multiple columns and hidden things and all of this kind of stuff. But where you can have an abbreviated standard. So if you want to just call it standard one, standard two, whatever the case might be, but then you've got your long standard for your school, that you're using, you can have that in there, but you know that I always call this standard adding and subtracting fractions. So I'll just do add sub fracs, you know, and that will be what I have on my spreadsheet. So it's nice and consolidated as opposed to the whole standard, which will take up all the space. But I've left it explicitly blank for teachers to fill in, and then it will factor or it will pull into the various tabs and spreadsheets that they can use. So it really is kind of transferable. And I've created two different versions, one with four levels of achievement and one with five levels of achievement. So that seems to be the two most common that we have. Yeah.
Very cool. So in thinking through like these tools that you have for teachers and just from your experience, what would you say are some of the common obstacles that you're seeing teachers face when they're trying to use data effectively? And, you know, how can they help to overcome them?
I think the biggest thing that people are getting stuck with is getting the data into the spreadsheets. I think hands down, that's the biggest struggle. We have piles of papers. We have, you know, grading that we do left, right, and center, but it stays on paper, or we just put in our final score, our final value. Where this started changing for me as a teacher is when my school was moving from the percent scale to a standards, and then we moved to proficiency scales. But within there, my teaching partner and I, we started playing with the Modern Classroom project, which I know you all have spoken with some folks about. Love it. I love it. So we did a kind of a modified version of that. And then and we started tracking, like, well, what are people going to have with our must-dos, our should-dos, our aspire-to-dos? We didn't have those specific rankings, I guess, but we kind of had like level two, level three, level four. So, you know, very similar type things. But we couldn't really track what they were doing if we were just looking at the overall assessment. So we would have here like level two questions or must do questions. Here are the level three questions, the should do questions. Here are the challenge extension questions, the exceeds or aspire to do's. And so we started tracking every question in there. And so while that was a pain to do, it just blew our minds wide open. Like, okay, we're seeing a whole lot more than just what's the average, because now we have to say, what does it look like for these low level questions? What does it look like for the questions that I want everybody to get? And how are we getting to the top ones? And if we're getting the top ones, but they're missing these middle questions, what does that say either about the student, the question, or their abilities, right? Like, so, you know, it's probably not so much that they can do this higher level question. It's probably a poorly worded question if they can't do the standard questions, but they can do those. Mm-hmm. So it started opening us up more to like, okay, well, how do we now change our assessments? And, you know, and so we were just, it just completely revolutionized the way that we were looking at our assessments and our teaching. But it takes that effort of getting everything into a place where you can actually work with it. And I think that's a big holdup as well, because that does take time. It took us time to figure out how to structure the assessments so we could do that. You know, I've also done it where before I did this, I would have like question one, two, three. Well, question one is really kind of a level three question. Question two is kind of a level one question. You know, and I was all over the place, and trying to enter that into a spreadsheet was a nightmare. But once we figured out how to restructure it, and it kind of tiered in a little bit more, you know, with some bleed over, it really helped us figure out how we can start tracking and using data a lot more.
It's really interesting. And of course, a Modern Classroom person, so I knew that there was some reason why I liked you. So you're talking to two guys who, you know, find numbers to be scary. We're English teachers. And I know from my experience, I became pretty good with dealing with data, but it took a long time and it took training. And I think that's part of the problem, is that teachers often aren't being trained on exactly how to look at, work with, analyze, and use data. But in talking to guys like us, how would you say educators can balance that data-driven decision-making without feeling overwhelmed by the numbers and the analytics that come along with that?
How do we encourage data without getting overwhelmed?
Yeah.
Is what you're... I think it's being so. You have to start with, what do I want to track? What's important for me to track? And it can't be everything. So I would say, you know, if you're going to start with something, maybe start with your major assessments and go with that and break down the different components within the major assessments and say, how can I get a better feel for what they're doing within here? It's almost like a rubric, right? You gather up all the different pieces of all these different columns or rows for your rubric, and you're kind of trying to come up with an overall score with that. But if you can do that and get it into a spreadsheet and then start looking at it longitudinally, then it starts to show up. Because, you know, if you're talking about writing or grammar or whatever for this assessment, you're going to talk about writing or grammar or whatever for this assessment as well. And if you could start tracking all of that here and tracking all of it here and tracking all of it here, you're going to be able to start seeing that information. Maybe you've got a warm-up ticket or an exit ticket and, you know, it's a grammar based, but okay, you know what, that's something I'm going to just grade on the fly, and just boom, hand it back, and I'm not going to track the formative stuff. I'm only going to focus on the summative stuff. And I think the other thing is, you know, I love coaches. Coaches are some of my, I love some of the coaches that I've been with. They're some of my favorite people. But sometimes the approaches that coaches take is incredibly overwhelming. You've got these stacks of paper and it's not boiled down to like a common theme, or it's not like filtered to try to figure out how can we be more intentional with the analytics of it. And then again, it becomes overwhelming because our coaches are here to help us. And like I said, coaches are some of my favorite people, but sometimes it gets more overwhelming having a coach in there because we're getting more work in piles and piles. So you've got to be able to find a way to extract that. And just as much as you guys don't like spreadsheets, get into a spreadsheet. And because there you can start crunching numbers. Yes, you can. You can. I swear to you, you can.
It's funny. I do like spreadsheets. I do.
Okay.
But the numbers do freak me out sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's one of the things that after me and my teaching partner started with tracking all this data, right? We started doing it for our major assessments when we were doing our modern classroom type stuff. Then I noticed like, okay, I've got all this great information. I'm doing these different summaries at the end of the columns for each student. And that still was hard for me to process. And it wasn't until I started color coding it as well, doing some conditional formatting within Google, where I can now look across and I can see, red, red, yellow, 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 green, green. Okay, I can tell what that's going to start doing, you know, and that is just easier to process than I think 1, 1, 1, 2, 2, 3, 3, you know, so it's just a lot easier, I think, to use some of those techniques as well.
Wow, that's really, really interesting. I'm engaged with how you use the data. However, let me play devil's advocate a little bit. I like that role, as Dustin knows.
Sure, okay. Sure.
So you have been giving us a perspective of data's usefulness from the pedagogical teacher's perspective, right? Right. So what's your opinion about, you know, when data goes into the hands of administrators and then it's used for a different purpose? Let's say it's used to assess teachers, you know, and they're teaching. So, you know, if the data shows, oh, the students are not improving, and then you tell the teacher, you need to buck up, you need to do more, you need to, you know, and it adds this stress and pressure on teachers to perform in the classroom. And then what happens is that they manipulate the data in the sense that, you know, teachers have a lot of power to design activities, design test papers. Mm. So do you see teachers adjusting assessment difficulty levels throughout the year to create an illusion of growth rather than capturing authentic learning? And is that a problem?
You are the devil here with that, aren't you? No, you know, I haven't seen that per se. I'm sure that's a possibility. And anyone that I would speak with, I would encourage people not to use this in a corrective manner, but as a guiding, in a guiding sense. I would hope that administrators aren't using it to punish teachers. You know, I can't control, nobody can control what administrators or what other people are going to do, but I would really say, like, for one of my tools, let's say, If we have these external exams for the IB, we get these results back, we're seeing that our paper two is in the crapper. And so, like, you know, the grades are dropping, they're doing great on paper one, but not paper two. Instead of saying, hey, teacher, you're terrible at this, like, let's get you some more training. Or the teacher can say, hey, can I get some more training on this? Because I'm seeing that my scores are not where I want them to be. What can I do for it? And, you know, what can we do to help try and boost this as well? So I think it could also to kind of flip it if a teacher is seeing that, say, hey admin, you know, can I get some training on this? Hey admin, can I partner, or can I, you know, do we have a coach that can come in and work with me on some of this stuff? Because I know that's not reaching the standards that I want to. And I think that will kind of turn it on its head, and kind of take some of that power away from if they're fearful of that. But you know, it all depends on the environment. You know, I don't know if you guys have ever seen Professor Lamb on social media, but if you're working at Professor Lamb School or Principal Lamb School, you don't have to worry about those kind of things. Right. But if you're working at some of these other schools where it's real toxic leadership, I don't think there's any way you're going to be able to avoid it. You know, like it's an unfortunate thing, and it's the unfortunate state of affairs of where we're at. So I think, you know, instead of marking up the scores, I would diffuse it. I would diffuse it by saying, hey, I'm not seeing my students getting to where I think they should be. What can we do about this? Let's work together, admin, and it will kind of take some of that fire away from them. I don't know.
So that's definitely the ideal situation we want to see. How about the interpretive nature of data? You know, how people say that you can make data show whatever you want, right?
Oh, absolutely. So,
especially in the realm of politics, which we will not go into, right, Dustin?
That's right.
No, we don't want to go into politics right now. So I think that's where I would say anytime that you're being presented with statistics, ask why. Ask why, and what is the purpose, and who is this serving? Those are the big things. So an example that came up, I don't know if you all are familiar with Youth Truth. It's an anonymous survey. It's a company that does an anonymous survey of teachers, teacher staff, students, and families. And they have this very large survey that they do, and then they crunch the numbers and they send it back to schools, and it kind of gets a pulse on how the kids and parents and teachers are all feeling about the school. And so they break it down and into various ways. And if you've done it for a couple of years, you can see how you're improving or falling apart over the years, you know, depending on what's happening in the school or the country or whatever the case might be. An example that came up, I was talking about this with my wife, making a statistic up. Let's say 30% of students at a school don't feel safe at the school. Okay. How do they answer these other questions? I know it's anonymous, but can we dig into that more? Like, do they have relationships with adults? Are they okay with things at home? Do they have friendship circles or not? And so, you know, okay, well, this is a concern. Yeah, great. 70% feels good. But if we've got this 30% again of this made up data that is saying that they don't feel good, well, okay, what other factors are feeding into that? And that's not always available. And so that's what I would say, like, you know, here we can present, look at this, 70% of our students are feeling great. Or you could say 30% aren't feeling so good, and it's because they're answering this way. Okay, so we need to focus on this thing over here. So, yeah, I think that the spinning the data however you want, or even presenting it with your end goal, if someone's not questioning why is that, where did those numbers come from, then you're always just going to get the masses. Like, even if it's a friendly audience, you should still be asking, where is this coming from? What are you trying to tell me here? What are you trying to sell me here?
All right. And you mentioned that we need to use spreadsheets. So what is your recommendation? Excel, Microsoft's version. And you mentioned something called Looker Studio. What's that?
Yeah. So Looker Studio, it's a data visualization software. So I've had two friends outside of the classroom very close friends. One does visualizations for juvenile justice in the United States and for juvenile justice reform. And another, it was a former mentor and professor of mine who's now working in the private sector, working on education data. And they both separately, when I said, hey, you know, I'm thinking about stepping out of the classroom for a little bit. What do you think? Dear friend, former mentor, always a mentor. You know, what do you think? And they both said, hey, you should look into this data visualization thing. You should look into this. So this is a common thing that happens all over business, everywhere. But it's not happening in schools. So we're just using spreadsheets. So what this software does, there's multiple, just like there's Excel and Sheets and Numbers for the different platforms, there's Looker, there's Tableau, there's Power BI. So there, you know, depending on what platform you're using, different companies have different visualization software. But what it does is it will take all of the data from your spreadsheets or from your database, and it will put it into these different graphs. The visualization and the interactivity comes with it. So let's say that 30% that we were talking about before, I've got 70% of people who are feeling good about school. I've got 30% who are not feeling good about school. You click on that bar in that bar graph, and now other graphs pop up or other graphs get populated and say, okay, just filtering just that 30%, here's how they answer other questions. So maybe you're looking at, here's happiness at school, or here's comfort at school, or safety at school. Here's positive adult models. Here's friendship circles. Here's completing homework, blah, blah, blah. So you're looking at it for the whole school, the whole campus, whatever it is. Then you click on that 30%. Everything kind of gets grayed out, but those things all get filtered with the responses from just those 30%. So that's where that's what the power of this Looker Studio is, and the data visualization is that it's going to start making it where you can dig into the data more and more. So, you know, that, like I said, that this is where you can start partnering, where I could start partnering with schools, or where schools can start seeking out data consultants to say, all right, we've got all this data from whatever sources. We want to start knowing more about it. We want to start knowing more about our students, and break down and find those trends. And you know, that's what the Looker Studio does. It can be just static graphs, just like you would in Google Sheets, or, you know, do your little plugin, have it shoot over to Looker. It's, you know, there's a little bit of a learning curve in there to get to use it as well, but you know, that's what I try to use with some of my bigger projects. So, you know, maybe not the grade books for the classroom teachers, because I don't want them to get overwhelmed, but for the schools and the administrators, you know, that's where I would go.
It's really interesting. And it sounds like a cool program, because I was using Tableau and very user-friendly, and I wanted it to be so much more than what it was while I was using it. So
it's steep. The learning curve is steep, isn't it?
Yeah. Very, yeah. Very much. Very, very much. Yeah.
And again, teachers don't have time for that, right?
Nope.
That's what turns us off from data.
And that was the problem. Right. Like, there was so much, and there couldn't be enough training, you know, not enough time for enough training to truly be able to apply and be able to use that system effectively. So, and that's the problem, right? I think about my years coming from, you know, charter schools where we would do, you know, quarterly, you know, exams or whatever. And then every quarter we were having to dig into data, and we were given like a few hours in a day. And it was like expected to turn this data around and then talk about how you're going to help all your subgroups of students, and what do you see that's wrong, and how are you going to spiral your teaching? There's just so much that comes at teachers when it comes to this. And I believe that data is incredibly important. Like, we have to be using it to inform our instruction. But so often it's just so overwhelming that there's such an overwhelming amount of it. And then we don't know how to parse it to be able to use it effectively. So
Right. The
things that you're talking about sound like they are things that can actually help, you know, teachers to be able to use this more effectively and actually, you know, use their data.
Yeah. Well, that's the goal. Again, my mission, how can I help teachers and administrators without giving them more work to do? So that would imagine if you had when you were working at those charter schools, those two or three powerful, powerful hours, if someone came in and said, here's all the data, just start clicking and start, start playing with it. Let me do that work for you. Like, put that out to someone else. And now let's focus on those 2 to 3 hours where you all like here have maybe have that person come in and say, how does this software work? What do we do with this? How can you gain insights from it? What kind of questions do you want to ask from it? Now go spend 2 to 3 hours going through that. Man, that's some powerful 2 to 3 hours as opposed to the frustrating 2 to 3 hours of, oh God, I want this to go into a spreadsheet. What range do I have to put it in to get this scatter plot or this chart to work? Oh, should I be using a pie graph or a bar graph? I don't know. Like you're just frustrated by the time you walk out of that. Like there's, it's a no-win situation and nothing gets done.
Yeah.
I'm speaking in very broad and general terms, but you know, these are the feelings that I've always had after these things. And I'm a math teacher. I've been a math teacher for almost 20 years and I worked in corporate with numbers as well. And I got frustrated with it all the time. So I can only imagine what you all were doing. So, you know, yeah, pay that little bit, get someone else to do it for you so you can make great time with your staff to really get insights out of it.
So that kind of leads me into my next question, which is, you know, outside of like getting your services or, you know, this app or whatever, what are some other ways that schools and districts can already start better supporting their teachers and using data more effectively? I think we're kind of like already touching on that subject a little bit, but what are your other thoughts that you have about how we could be helping our teachers more effectively?
I would love to see coaches doing more of this work. If the schools don't have resources to get someone outside of the school to help out, I think instructional coaches or learning coaches, I think they could fall into there. You've got, depending on how big the school or the network is, or school or district is, the IT or the tech department, get them involved with pulling some of this data. And you know, offload some of the initial aspects of it off of the teachers to somebody who can just focus on it, or give a teacher who understands this stuff, who feels good about this stuff, who can get their way around even a spreadsheet and get some graphs and things in there, get them to say, hey, can you work on this for a little bit? So that way we can, you know, we'll give you a personal day or a paid day here and here at the school. And so we can get that going. Get some more training on for teachers, how to do some of these basic things. You know, as it's assumed that everybody knows how to make a good graph and how to organize data and how to clean data and how to put it into your spreadsheets, but maybe they don't. And so let's put some time in there. How do you get some of the stuff color coded? You know, some basic things like that. Like just it's another dry training. Like, hey, let's go do spreadsheet training. Yay. Like all teachers will be jumping at that opportunity. But you know, either get someone to help you out with that or start training people on how they can actually do some of the stuff and then get them to implement it right away.
Right. So this is all very, very insightful. Motivated to try out more data analytics. Yes. but being an AI guy, I'm just curious to know, have you tried using AI to help you in the data analytics? And does it help to move beyond measuring what's easy to measure and towards capturing deeper learning outcomes by using AI tools?
I use AI quite a bit in helping me build some of these grade books and spreadsheets and dashboards because I had time to do so. I don't use it for any analytics. I don't drop in spreadsheets or data or any client data in there for for privacy purposes, and I don't recommend that for other people, for teachers to do it either, to be honest, not just for privacy, but you know, the amazing thing about AI is it simplifies so much. The really challenging thing is that it often takes away the critical thought. And so, like, I know even for myself, when I was doing corporate, I was like mad spreadsheet skills. And then 20 years later, I'm back like, okay, how do I average again? And so, like, but I start building these massive things that are pulling in things from this spreadsheet and over here and looking to say, is if this thing says this, then make sure that it does this and all this other stuff that I know is capable. I don't know how to do it. So I'm asking, okay, AI, I want this to do this. And then I'm looking at it and I say, okay, it's sort of doing it, but this is still happening. Here's another spit back of code. The problem I see with Joe average, non-data friendly teacher doing that is they won't know, do I need to revise that more? Is it doing what I want it to do? Am I asking it the right questions? And am I asking it to the right follow-up questions? And the critical thought, like if someone were to ask me right now, all right, how do you use the array function where it will filter out all this stuff while looking to see if it's a summative and if it's a specific standard and then spit out all this stuff? I couldn't tell you how I do it. 20 years ago, it would be in my brain, but now I'm having someone else do it for me and I'm just popping it in. I'm like, yep, okay, that's working. Well, nope, that's not working. Let's try it again. Okay, now it's working, but I'm not retaining it. And so the critical analysis, the critical thought that goes with it is where I'm hesitant on it. Unless you know what you're doing and what you're talking about with it, I'm hesitant. I'm a fan, but I'm also hesitant, especially when it comes to education. You know, it takes a long time to turn the Titanic, and education is that Titanic. AI ed tech can turn on a dime. It's a little what are those little like little motorcycles, jet skis? It's like a jet ski out there. But you know, the education Titanic, that thing ain't gonna move. So I'm hesitant on like a lot of the ed tech stuff that's out there, especially because they're not bringing teachers in to really help with that. And then if you just throw it into general GPT or a general bot or whatever they're called, you know, if you're not asking the right questions, then I don't think you're gonna get the right output. So yes, but. Yes, with a caveat.
Okay, let me go. Yes, and.
Okay, yes, and. Do it.
And, but what about the latest models that just came out? You know, the ones with thinking, its ability to think and reason and do a lot, huge calculation. You can calculate the density of a supermassive black hole, you know, just like that. When I'm looking at it,
Ghazali. Our previous guest would tell you that doesn't matter, new models or not, AI doesn't think. Come on now.
Yes and no, but then if
I'm
then
tell Joe.
Yeah. So basically, the crux of my question is, you know, when I use the AI to like create lesson designs and you know to plan my lessons, normally I will go, hey, yeah, I'm doing this. Then the AI will give me its output and I will go like, oh, why didn't I think of that? So it's more of that, why didn't I think of that moments in data analytics? I'm wondering, does that happen in the sense that you could be the best data analyst, you know, but still being human, we may not see certain things. So where AI can perhaps cover those blind spots and help you to give more thorough analysis in that sense. Do you see AI helping out in that way moving forward?
I would say I would use it in more of a preliminary aspect. Okay, I've got this data, these data sets, whatever they're covering. What are some of the best ways that I could go about visualizing these? What are the best ways that I should go about summarizing these? And then taking that and building on it, but not having it do it for me. Because again, this is where I'm immersing myself. So I know, yes, it might give me some blind spots, but if I know nothing about it, I don't know what's blind and what's not. So I don't want to just go in and just say, do this for me, because it might not be. It might be right. It might not be right. I wouldn't know. You know, like, how do I know that that answer is correct? How do I know that that's, how can I trust that? You know, so, I think if it's in your realm, and you're able to recognize where you might have blind spots, then I think it's really powerful. But, you know, just for, you know, I just, like, I wouldn't want to say, Hey, ChatGPT, what will you create me, an essay on whatever topic that you guys are covering? And I'm just going to hand it in. Like, it might produce something great, but it's also not going to be critically thought out. And if you ask me about it, I'm not going to know anything about it. So, you know, there'll be a lot of blind spots, or there won't. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if I'm really answering your question, or if I'm just kind of rambling and trying to justify my skepticism. But
yeah, I think when you deal with AI, you need a healthy dose of skepticism. So what you're doing is actually really, really good, because I do see the other extreme end of the spectrum, where teachers just trust everything, even though you know that the biases and the hallucinations that can happen, you know, but they just trust it totally. So that is not the way to go. Yeah. And I think you also provide the answer to that. You need expertise. So you need training. You need to broaden your horizons and increase the depth of your knowledge on what you're doing. And only then can you really, really use AI effectively. So that's where I'm coming from, which you have highlighted as well. So that's great.
Yeah. And that's where I think, like, ed tech as well. I've looked at, you know, I've just perused the job postings for ed tech, just for kicks, and nowhere in there, on any of the job requirements is there teaching or classroom, except for, you know, a very, very few. And when I see that, oh, this was made by a teacher, Modern Classroom. Right there, it's done by a it comes up from teachers who've been in the classroom and they're working with it, and more teachers are coming in. It's not someone says, you know, I've got a theory about this. I did teach that one class 20 years ago, but I'm going to build my whole career on that 1 year and the research that I've done. Like, I have a real hard time with that. But, you know, if it's AI that's built by four teachers, then, or consulted with on the regular, and not just so I can get free swag and we can have them troubleshoot it because we had our programmers do it who don't know anything about this, but we want to give someone a free t-shirt and get some free beta testing out of people. Not that kind of stuff, but like, hey, teachers, will you help me develop this thing that I want to do to help you and your peers? Those I have a lot more trust in. But
you've touched a raw nerve, and I love you for it. This is one of my biggest bugbear, because I do get invitations to test out new things by developers, and most of the time I can tell you, I can tell when it is not designed by a teacher. You know, either the interface is really awful, or the outcomes don't really help, you know. So that's one thing I really hope we see more of. You know, before you launch something that is meant for a particular group or audience, make sure you have that group or audience as part of your consulting group, to design the platform. Yeah, then you know it will work, you know.
And even though the littlest thing, like, can this connect to my system that I'm using? Or is this going to be another standalone system that I have to have separate logins for myself, for my students, and separate things that I have to load in? Even that little thing right there, which probably isn't a little thing on the tech side, but that kind of stuff is like driving us crazy. Like, I don't want to use yet another thing. So, you know, again, like with some of the stuff that I've put out there, I've tried to make it like, well, you're already using a spreadsheet. Try using this spreadsheet. You know, like you're tracking all your stuff as it is, try tracking it try tracking it in here and see if I can give you some add-ons to it. If not, forget all the bells and whistles and just use it to track whatever, you know, like I feel like it's really got to have the teacher's hand in it, and a recent teacher as well.
Yeah, that's very important.
Yeah.
Going back to what you mentioned about the platforms that you use, you said you use Looker Studio instead of Power BI. I've heard of this before. What would you recommend for a newbie teacher who is afraid of numbers, who doesn't do data analytics, you know, never done it before? What platforms do we start off with to learn where the learning curve is not so steep?
Yes. Microsoft Excel, Google Sheets.
Are those enough? Powerful enough?
Yeah. I mean, if you've never done anything, yes, because that's something is better than nothing. And you want to take the baby incremental steps. So first thing, get it into something that, you know, we might have like all of our stuff on a nice little gridded clipboard. Let's get it into something electronic. So that way we can start doing some quick summaries, some quick averaging, some quick summations, some quick filtering. Okay, cool. Let's just get it there. Then let's learn how to maybe do some coloring. Then let's learn how to do some slightly more advanced things, maybe an if statement, or maybe copying and pasting, or using different ranges. Like, you can scaffold on more and more and more as much as you want, but really get it into something digital that you can keep track of.
Can the Google Sheet or Excel do what you mentioned earlier, which I found very useful, the trend, finding the trend and plotting and all that?
Yeah. Yeah. That's what, so in the spreadsheets that I've created for teachers, it takes, let's say, beginning is one, approaching is two, meeting is three, exceeding is four. So I'll take those and move them into a numeric base, because it's got to be numbers, not alpha, if you want to do anything with it in a spreadsheet. And then you can graph that on a chart or on a scatter plot with the trend lines, and it just goes in order, sequential order, the first test, second test, third test, fourth test, fifth test. Hopefully, is that going up? I don't know if that's going up or if that's going down, whichever way with the cameras, if it's going up this way or if it's going up that way, I don't know. But hopefully it's going up, and then you can see the trend of that.
You make it sound absolutely So easy. Yes.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've started doing some little YouTube shorts and shorts on LinkedIn and trying to spread some of these easy rules and these easy tips for people. You know, I'm sure a lot of people just like, okay, pass, but you know, I'm trying to put some stuff out there to help people out as well. Maybe you can.
Yeah. What's your YouTube channel?
Datafied Classroom. Yep. I've got another one, but it's for my students. It's like all math stuff, but that's just for students and student content. But for teachers, since we're talking about teachers, Datafied Classroom is the one that I use. I still haven't got a lot of stuff out there yet. But that's my goal in some of my downtime, is to get more of those things posted and sent out, you know, and maybe even linked into my website, which is also datafiedclassroom.com. Shameless plug. Got to do it, right? You know, have them linked in there, but yeah.
Awesome. You know, and Tom, I was thinking too, as you're talking about like the ways that you've used AI, but not to plug self in and have the AI use it. I appreciate that a lot, because something that I talk a lot about with teachers is the same thing regarding standards. I think it's incredibly important for teachers to dissect standards themselves so that they understand them, so that they know the components that go. Now, if you're taking that knowledge and then plugging it in to help you build lesson plans and things of that nature and activities, that's where I see it. But if you're using AI to break standards down, you're never actually learning the standards. So you never actually know whether things you're doing in the classroom align or don't align. And so I appreciate how you reflected on just kind of like the ways that you do use it. And then the dangers behind some of that as well. because I share some of that same, because I also am using AI like every single day, you know, but I think there's really good pathways for it. And then there's others that it's just better to use our own brains to dig in. So that
just made me think, I wonder if you guys, for your students, you could have them do a persuasion paper through AI and then have them defend it in class, like a dissertation, and just say the class is open. They're going to drill you on it, and you've got to defend whatever you've got to do. So they can start seeing, okay, it's not just memorizing the thing, but how do I think critically about what's spit out from here, and how can I support that?
Interesting. So what a great conversation. Really fun to have an opportunity to talk about data. And I really feel like there was a lot of information here that can be very, very beneficial to teachers. So I know you've kind of already said you're at Datafied Classroom on YouTube. Also, website is Datafied Classroom. We will put that information in the show notes for everybody so that you can look Tom up. And then can they find you anywhere else?
I've tried to start a Facebook and Instagram, but they are very empty. So the best bets, you know, you can find maybe find me on LinkedIn, as well. But yeah, really the website and YouTube are probably going to be the two that are going to be growing more than anything.
Awesome. Before we wrap things up, do you have any, final thoughts or advice that you'd like to share with educators who are looking to make a better use of data? Any other shameless plugs for Datafied Classroom?
No. Well, I mean, you can find some stuff for teachers, affordably priced, on Datafied Classroom. Start a nice conversation with me, and I could probably even float you some, on the down low. Let's do some baby steps. Just start the baby steps and get it off the paper and into a spreadsheet. And the more you can make that habit, the more this other stuff will start falling into place for you.
Well, Tom, thank you so much for joining us. Listeners, as always, thank you for tuning in, and just getting to hear all the incredible expertise coming from Tom. Definitely look him up and connect. To all of our listeners, thanks for being here. Remember to like, subscribe, review, share the podcast. We have new episodes every other Monday. And if you'd like to be a guest, check out the form in our show notes, because we are always looking for more teachers to come on and be guests. You do not need to be an expert in anything, just passionate about education and ready to talk. So thank you everybody for being here. Again, Tom, thank you. Ghazali, as always, thank you. Listeners, thank you. Until next time.